The midterms have been on everybody's mind, one form or another, for quite a while. And as that date approaches rapidly now, even more so. Our next guest, we're very excited to have him. We had to reschedule. He had an emergency. Everything's fine, ladies and gentlemen. Eric Eggers is going to join us. He's written a book called Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election. He is, of course, a lead researcher from the Government Accountability Institute. He was heavily involved with Peter Schweitzer writing Clinton Cash. And it's just a pleasure to have him on the Power Hour. Eric, welcome to the Power Hour, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. Sorry for the issues last week, but happy to be here today and excited to talk about the book and anything else that comes up.
Absolutely. When you see a book like this, the book is very cool. Cover has a little I voted sticker, kind of gives you a little chill, kind of another meaning of what that really means or what we're facing. What prompted you to write this book with such a stark title?
Well, to be clear, right, the book actually features two I voted stickers, and that's kind of the point, because I work at the Government Accountability Institute, as you mentioned, with Peter Schweitzer, and we have a whole team that does investigative research, and we really believe in the mantra of showing, not telling, and so we believe in kind of going where the facts take us, and you hear so much talk about voter fraud. Obviously, President Trump talked about voter fraud and this idea of millions of votes happening in 2016. And of course that was, roundly and summarily dismissed as, there's no way that happened. That's a myth. That's, voter fraud. We're told by groups like the Brennan Center, is as common as lightning strikes. And so we said, all right, well, let's just kind of see what the actual evidence says. So we undertook, an unprecedented look at the national level. And we gathered as many publicly available voter rolls as we could get, and we hired a data scientist, and we contracted with these commercial databases that are used to detect EBT fraud, identity theft, things like that. And, we said, all right, well, let's see what the data shows from actual votes cast in 2016. And to be honest with you, what we found was honestly shocking. We found 2,100 examples of double voting in the state of Florida alone. Now, Daniel, I'll tell you what that means. That means that over 2,100 people in the state of Florida cast a ballot in 2016 and then cast a second ballot in a second state. And so, I'm old enough to remember the 2000 presidential election. And, of course, we heard about it came down to Florida and 537 votes and hanging chads and everything else. But, what we realized is, well, hey, 2,100 is actually 2,166 double votes. That's four times the margin of victory of a presidential election this century. So right away, we realized we're dealing with something on a magnitude and scale that is clearly large enough to swing a presidential election and clearly counters this narrative that, voter fraud can't occur on a large enough scale to matter in a real way. And so that's really what kind of prompted. We'll say, well, all right, well, what else do we hear that's not true? And what else, is true about the reality of voter fraud? And that's really what started the book.
Well, wow, quite an introduction. As you began to look at the evidence, were you expecting this, or you said it shocked you? Were you not expecting this at all?
Yeah, I would say it was shocking, just because I was so familiar with this common refrain that voter fraud wasn't a real problem. In fact, when I told many of my friends that were Democrats that I was working on the book on voter fraud, they inevitably said, oh, I guess you're learning to speak and write Russian then. Because, in their opinion, the only way that voter fraud could occur was through this outside influence of Russian agents or anyone else. And so, I think we were shocked to find out how commonplace voter fraud occurred. But then as I dug into it, I realized, well, hey, that 2,166 votes, that's actually maybe not that surprising when I realized that nearly 3 million people, Daniel, are registered to vote in more than one state in this country. That's Pew Center statistics that were actually cited by the Supreme Court not too long ago. Nearly 24 million voter registrations, that's 1 in 8 in this country, are wrong. Or totally inaccurate. Even President Obama's own Commission on Election Administration found that as many as 16 million voter registrations, are totally flawed. So there's not really a lot of disagreement about the vulnerability of the system is what I discovered. And so, that was sort of, wait a minute. If we're hearing that voter fraud's not a problem, then it stands to reason in my mind. I don't know what you think. But in my mind, one of two things has to be true, at least one of two things. Either you have to believe that the system, in terms of infrastructure and the accounting and the databases, they have to be accurate, and the information has to be secure. Well, based on the statistics I just cited and some others that we can get into, that's obviously not the case. Or, then there can't be any outside groups that are actively working to exploit those vulnerabilities. And as I discovered in the book, in a layout, that's obviously not the case as well. So it's quite problematic, and based on my research, and one of the reasons I wrote the book, is clearly I believe voter fraud to be a very real threat to American elections.
Let me go back to this 2100. This is in Florida. Now, did you survey all of Florida that you said that you could get your hands on? Was there, could you only get your hands on 10%? Did you get it on all of them? I mean, you see what I'm saying? Does this represent every voting register in Florida or just a small sample?
No, it's a great question. So we actually were able to get 21 states worth of voter rolls, which includes all the votes cast in all those states, which includes Florida. So, yes, so of all the votes cast in Florida, and by the way, what you're touching on is a very important point, because one of the things you hear is, voter fraud, it might occur in a very limited way, but from a percentage standpoint, it can't be on a scale or magnitude large enough to matter. And so, the left or people that would want to deny the reality of voter fraud would say, 2,166 double votes in Florida, that's actually a very small percentage when you consider the number of votes cast statewide. And that's not wrong. But, as I just noted, presidential elections have come down to a fourth of that this century. President Trump, won his vote in 2016 by a grand total of about 70,000 votes over three states. So just because as a percentage it's not large doesn't mean it's not impactful. And so, and that's actually, that's one state's worth of data. And the fact that we're only able to gather 21 states with the data, I think is actually a little bit scandalous as well, because,
sure.
The point is, and this gets into, this part of what the subtitle is, why are all states worth of data not readily accessible? And as you unpack that and you unpeel it, what you realize is that there's very real obstacles that are intentionally obstructed by the left to try to keep this type of analysis from occurring. So, I think it's very concerning.
Well, you bring up this one way. The recount, what's her name, Stein? Jill Stein.
Jill Stein, right.
Who ran for the president. I believe it was in Michigan when they had the recount. I believe it was Michigan. Even when they went through recount, they went to some of these precincts, and they found they couldn't even do a recount because the seals were broken on a lot of the voting. Did you account for that or look at that? Did that alarm you when you started to see this?
Well, what is alarming is oftentimes recounts don't occur, and the threshold to get a recount is so high. I remember there was a very close election, I want to say, in Pennsylvania. And this is, we were writing about this earlier this year, right at the deadline. We're throwing stuff at the end of the book. And it was a very close race, but to be able to get a recount, it was sort of comical. You had to get three different people from the same precinct to complain about the same issue. So, Jill Stein's complaints, which are well documented, and not just in Michigan, but in a number of areas, I think speak to the fact that it's not just Republicans that often suffer at the hands of election administrators, but it's often even sort of liberal insurgents or people that would want to upend the Democratic establishment often find themselves on the wrong side of, shenanigans, for lack of a better term, or irregularities. Or quite honestly, voter fraud. There's been a number of videos on YouTube from the recent New York election where people that were supporting Cynthia Nixon, for example, are kind of the insurgent slate of candidates against the establishment, they would report a number of issues, including just frankly not being able to vote in precincts in which they were told that were eligible. So it's quite easy. I mean, here's the reality. It's quite easy for the powers that be able to put their thumb on the scale and impact in real ways the administration of honest elections. And so, unfortunately, while that impacts Republicans, it also can impact these insurgent Democrats.
Well, you bring up a good point, and even just looking at trying to back up and see this from an unbiased political point of view, I totally agree with you. It seems like the Democratic Party, they're the ones that are always defending. There's nothing wrong with, don't look here. They're like the wizard behind the curtain or something. Don't look here. Don't mind that. Really? It's like, oh, there's nothing ever wrong. Nothing ever happens. Russians are the only ones that possibly do this. We don't need a voter ID because that'll hurt people. It's like, really? What?
You're close, right? Voter ID is racist, is the argument, actually.
Yes, racist.
Of course, that's ridiculous, right? Because, if you wanted to, buy a glass of wine, if you wanted to get on an airplane, or, if you wanted to go to the Democratic National Convention in 2016, you needed a driver's license. So this idea that you would need one to be able to cast a ballot is that somehow it's racist, I think it's flawed, it's foolish, it's silly. And on some levels, even racist in and of itself, to assume that certain demographics are incapable of performing a basic civic function. And in fact, the basis of that is that, when you require ID, it's suppressive or suppressive of minority turnout or minority democratic participation. And there's just no evidence to support that. In fact, the opposite is true. In states like Georgia and Ohio and Indiana, after they've implemented voter ID laws, they've actually seen increases in minority turnout. So, you're right. I mean, the point is, any argument against some of these things starts to fall apart once you really start to look at where the facts take us.
There's the music. We'll be back on the other side. Short segment coming up. George Soros, there's that name again. He shows himself prevalent in all these discussions. Why? We'll ask Eric Egers on the other side. The book is Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election. Stay tuned. Eric Egers is the author. He's a lead researcher over Government Accountability Institute, and that's what we're trying to make, government accountable. Imagine that. The name of the book is Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election. And when you look at the left, what does that mean, the Democratic Party? It seems like it always centers in the Democratic Party. Is it just me, or is that where all these questions start to arise? George Soros, pretty soon that name comes up if you dig any deep at all here. What in the world kind of influence does George Soros here, and how did he get that influence?
Yeah, it's a great question. What we've discovered and what I write about in the book is that, and this is why the subtitle is How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election. By the way, I'll just tell your listeners that, we have a website that continually updates and includes a number of stories that are things that are in the news today about voter fraud and the impact that George Soros is having and others on the election, and they can read all about it at voterfraudbook.com. But basically, what George Soros does is two things. He funds organizations that fight any attempt to increase or improve voter security. I mentioned the stats in the last segment about the number of voter registrations that are wrong or completely inaccurate. What I didn't tell you is that there are 248 counties in this country that have more registered voters than citizens of legal voting age. So, that just shows you, and that touches, by the way, every corner of the country. So, we know there are problems with the inaccuracy of the system, the way it's administered. So what Soros does then, because there's been an effort, a number of states have tried to say, we want to make sure that the people that are voting are the people who they say they are. So they have a voter ID law. well, Soros fund legal entities to block that. You know, Mark Elias, who was a Clinton campaign attorney, he filed a lawsuit in Ohio on behalf of several organizations that was funded by George Soros to do this, to try to prevent Ohio's voter ID law from being implemented. They also tried to block states' efforts to keep illegal voters or ineligible voters off of their voting rolls. So the state of Ohio had a Supreme Court case recently decided in a 5-4 ruling that validated Ohio's efforts to make sure that the people on the voting rolls were the people that should be voting as legal. The Soros funds efforts to block both those things. At the same time, and this is really important, he funds groups like Acorn and La Raza, whose whole job is to go out and then grab as many voters as possible and funnel them through those vulnerabilities and gaps in the system that the legal entities fight to make sure still exist. You know, I mean, why haven't we heard much from groups like Acorn and La Raza recently? Well, they've had to change their name. Why? Because of how chronically and commonly they've been affiliated with voter fraud. I think in a sense, that's kind of what the playbook is, right? Like you try to make sure the system remains vulnerable, and you fund groups to exploit those vulnerabilities.
You're describing a nightmare scenario. I mean, for some decent person sitting here listening to this, would make you aghast. But you're talking about it and discussing it, and it's so matter of fact. It's like, what confidence can we have in the voting system? Can we have any?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I think a common critique of doctors is that they sometimes lack compassion with the manner in which they describe brutal medical realities. I don't take much pleasure in detailing the depths of the concern that we should all have for the system. Here's another part of it that's connected to George Soros, and unfortunately, this is not going to make anyone feel any better. He has been involved with something called the Secretary of State Project. You know, at different levels, the Secretary of State is usually the top election official in states. In states like Florida, where I live, it's an appointed position. But in states like Ohio or West Virginia, they're elected. And so Minnesota as well. And so, you know, what the effort has done is they have something called the Secretary of State Project, where they want to target these political races and make sure they get Democrats that are sympathetic to the Soros playbook in there, so they have as lax of oversight as possible. In the state of Minnesota, for example, you know, Al Franken was elected to the Senate and became the 60th vote in favor of Obamacare, in large part because of the Democrat Secretary of State that's in office that permitted any number of irregular things to occur. You know, it came out years later that there are over 1,000 clearly fraudulent votes cast in that race, and of course Al Franken won by about 300 votes. So, that speaks to the power that Secretaries of State have in these close races. The state of West Virginia recently has a Republican Secretary of State, and they were able to legally remove 100,000 illegal voters. Well, that person's in office only because he replaced a Democrat who was part of the Soros Secretary of State Project. So, I mean, it's a widespread, nationwide effort, and it matters in many races around the country.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. We're talking to Eric Eggers. Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election is the book, votefraudbook.com. You can have current event articles and hear more about the book there, votefraudbook.com. Also like to make you aware of thepowermall.com, the specials that we have. The Super Silver, of course, is all on sale this week. The REM Sleep. If you don't wake up in the morning and feel, you know, charged, smile, you know, raise your arms in the air and stretch and feel, I feel good, I'm ready for the day. If you don't feel like that, try a bottle of the REM Sleep. Try a whole bottle. You'll run through it. It'll take you about a month to run through it and see if that doesn't make a difference. If your sleep doesn't catch up, your body doesn't start going into these deeper cycles and getting repaired, refreshed, renewed, what have you. Of course, all the other products we have at the Power Mall, you know you need them, and we offer them because that's how we're supported. We don't get the check from George Soros. We're not Acorn. We're not La Raza. We're not out here trying to undermine America. So I don't know about you, Eric, but I didn't get a check in the mail from George Soros this month. Our check comes from you, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I will tell you, I have three small children in my house. I would love a bottle of anything that's going to help me sleep better You know, normally I use bourbon, but if you've got something else that's going to make a little bit better, I'm all about it. No problem.
Well, let's do it. Catherine, you're listening. Eric, during the break, I'll talk to you. I'll get your email address. I'll get your address. We will send you a bottle. We'll have you try it, and then you you can send us an email. Tell us how it worked for you. We'll send you a bottle.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, but sometimes our kids are like, hey, it sounds like you need a vitamin. You know, the vitamin's a melatonin. But, no, listen, the sleeping's important, and so are elections, and obviously that's what I'm here to talk about. And, yeah, I don't get a check from...
Let's get back on elections.
Yeah, but George Soros is not the only person that's impacting elections in this country, and I talk about this in a subsequent chapter. But, you know, Tom Perez is also integral to the Democrats' plan to impact elections, and in some ways it's more insidious because, you know, Tom Perez, and you may know this, you know, but before he became the head of the Democratic National Committee, he was in the Obama Justice Department where he worked in the Civil Rights Division, which oversees voting. Before that, he worked for a group called Casa de Maryland. And Casa de Maryland is actually, and it's very much like Acorn and La Raza, they receive, unlike you and I, Daniel, they receive Soros funding as well. And they have like one primary objective, and that is to advocate for foreign citizen voting. You know, in many people are surprised to learn that despite it being written into federal law that that non-citizens or foreign citizens are not allowed to vote in federal elections, many municipalities and states have allowed foreign citizens to vote in local or regional elections. The city of San Francisco recently allowed for illegal immigrants to vote in school board races, for example. City of Chicago allows for non-citizens to vote in certain elections. Areas of Massachusetts and actually areas of Maryland, because of Casa de Maryland, allow for non-citizens to vote in those elections as well. And I was honestly shocked to find that out. Tom Perez, but it's been going on for a long time. Tom Perez's hometown of Tacoma Park, Maryland, has been allowing non-citizen voting since 1992. So, I mean, you know, so this idea of foreign citizens being able to shape American elections is very much real. And, of course, as you may know, you know, foreign citizens or non-citizens actually do impact American elections, you know, because of the census. So we allocate electoral votes to states based on their actual population, not just the population of legal citizens. So states like California, for example, have more electoral votes because of the number of legal immigrants or even illegal immigrants that live there. And so it actually works out to be about 5 electoral votes worth of representation for non-citizens. You know, there's a reason why when the Trump administration announced that they wanted to have the citizenship question on the census in 2020, you heard so much outrage and backlash, and people even mentioned this idea of voter suppression. And you're like, well, wait a minute, how is that related? Why is it voter suppression to ask about your citizenship status? And it's because of the correlation with the Electoral College. But yeah, it's very much the future. You know, for the first time ever, and this is quite terrifying, but the first time ever, a majority of Democrats, it's 54% of Democrats, 53% of self-described liberals, have said they favor illegal immigrant voting in American elections. So, I mean, this is the future. This is the future, and it's being spearheaded by Tom Perez.
You brought up a good point. I never even thought about the Electoral College. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, when President Trump and Hillary Clinton competed, you know, California had, whatever, 50 electoral votes. Well, if you took out all the illegals out of state, they'd only have 40-something or 5 less. Like, I didn't even think about that implication. Wow, that's very powerful in itself. Why is it, I mean, just listening to you, Eric, and in your book, the parts that I've read in your book, you lay out, I mean, this is such an iron proof, it's like matter of fact, that we got a problem. Why is this so hard for most of America to even go there?
It's a great question. I think there's a couple reasons. Number one is because it runs counter to this dominant narrative that you hear, and it's important to understand where does that narrative come from. So it comes from, you know, mainstream media outlets who, by the way, also themselves take money from George Soros entities. And inevitably, they cite a group called the Brennan Center, and that's a group out of New York, and they also have taken over $10 million from George Soros. And, you know, they're the ones that are putting out these publications, say, oh, voter fraud is as infrequent as lightning strikes. You know, this is something that there's a myth, and it's not happening on a scale large enough to sway elections. Well, if you kind of dig into what their actual definitions say, you know, you realize very quickly that they define voter fraud in the narrowest possible terms. You know, they say, well, voter fraud is legally only an act of impersonation by a non-voter of a legal voter. But, you know, Daniel, what I think is that I would think voter fraud is anything that robs an honest voter of the true weight of their vote. And the sad reality is, because of the efforts of George Soros and because of the efforts of Tom Perez, a lot of things that we would consider to be voter fraud are actually legal. And so, you know, so they kind of get away, and they're technically correct by saying, oh, voter fraud is very frequent. There's only been 65 convictions nationwide and all these things. And that's true. But there's also quite a bit that's occurred that I think any reasonable person would consider to be voter fraud, but the law allows. But a lot of that has to do with absentee ballots and the people that are allowed to collect and harvest these absentee ballots from senior citizens in a practice known as granny farming, by which these political operatives go and they cultivate relationships with senior citizens, and then they help them fill out the absentee ballot request forms, and then they're there to collect the ballot themselves, and then they help them fill out the ballot, and then they go and drop them off at the polling places. You know, there's a lot of examples of, that I include in the book of that. And then when law enforcement investigates and media writes follow-up articles about it, they say, hey, this is clearly problematic. But inevitably, no charges are filed, right? And so that actually only fuels the narrative that, well, voter fraud's not a problem because, you know, no convictions occurred. So, I mean, that's part of it. But the other part of it is if you want to act like voter fraud's a real problem, well, inevitably, you're going to be called a racist because it's seen as this pretext for something that's considered to be voter suppression, which is just, you know, trying to move.
Well, it is voter suppression. Eric, I don't think we need to, hide it. It is voter suppression. I guess I'm a radical because I want one citizen, one vote counted accurately and fairly. Okay. And I want to suppress everything else. That's fine. I'm suppressing. Then I'm a suppressor. Then call me a suppressor.
You're clearly a suppressor. But yeah, you know, I think we as Americans should be in favor of as many legal voters voting as possible. And I think we should be in favor of, you know, not constructing obstacles for legal voters. But I think we also need to be honest and realistic about, like, what constitutes undue burden for legal voters to be able to vote. You know, showing an ID, I don't think, constitutes an undue burden. And, you know, we talked about the rationale for that previously. But that's why, right? Like, that's why you hear this, because, oh, well, you know, you're just trying to keep poor people or black people from voting, and that's not the case. In fact, here's what does happen. Because of the less effort, because they keep the system so vulnerable, and this is 100% true, they end up victimizing the very groups that they claim they want to protect. Now, what does that mean? It means groups like non-citizens, like foreign citizens, whether you're a green card holder or you're an illegal immigrant, because it's so easy to vote for non-citizens or foreign citizens, many foreign citizens end up unwittingly voting, and as a result, end up jeopardizing their actual citizenship status. There's a priest in Illinois recently who committed no crime other than voting when he was first here. Now he faces deportation back to England. That's just one example, but it's quite common, and there's many details like that in the book.
The book is Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the next election, which is coming up really quick, very important. It's a very good book. If you can hear Eric go over these very important issues, sometimes they're vague, people can't grasp them. He puts them right down to brass tacks, which is where we want to be. Boom, 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 A, B, C. And so no matter what label people want to throw at you when you investigate this, fine, whatever. Here's the truth. How about the truth? What label do you want to make to the truth? Here's what's going on. We are vulnerable, and we're seeing, I don't know if it's the same playbook, but certainly seems similar with this Kavanaugh situation that's being played out like theater right now in the Senate. What do you make of this Kavanaugh situation?
Yeah, what I think it speaks to is, and this is why I think people should be so concerned about what's going to happen in November, is, you know, we're seeing, and, you know, I don't know how old you are and how long you've been kind of paying attention, but, you know, I've never seen an opponent or a political opposition that's as motivated and as emotional as what we're seeing from Democrats right now. And what I think it speaks to is their clear belief in the moral purity and righteousness of their objective, right? So what's on the ballot for them is nothing less than the impeachment of a president. There's nothing less than the blocking of a Supreme Court nominee. There's nothing less than the abolishment of ICE, right? There's nothing less than, you know, the expansion of a socialist agenda, which includes, you know, Medicare for All and any number of other things. So, you know, so I think the ends clearly in the minds of many on the left justify the means. And so if it means exploiting this incredibly vulnerable election system, then why not? And let's make no mistake, the system could not be more vulnerable. We talked earlier in the show about, you know, the stats, right? Like the 3 million people registered to vote in more than one state, the 248 counties that have more registered voters than citizens of legal voting age.
Wow.
So that means the system's, you know, clearly rife with error. Well, how easy is it to exploit that error? Here's how easy it is. The city of New York, this is just one example, and this is in the book, which, again, your listeners can find more about at voterfraudbook.com. But the city of New York said, hey, we've got a problem. And we hear all this stuff about our problems with elections. Let's send undercover agents in to see just how vulnerable this is. So what they did is it's the Department of Investigation. And so they sent undercover agents into different precincts around New York City to cast ballots in elections that they knew weren't going to be close, so that because they didn't want to actually, you know, negatively impact real races. So these undercover agents attempted to vote on behalf of people who clearly were not supposed to be on the voter rolls, right? These are people that no longer live in the state, or people that were deceased, or people that were incarcerated, right, or convicted felons. So these undercover agents attempted to cast a total of 63 ballots. Well, of the 63 ballots, 61 of them were successfully cast by these undercover agents. And by the way, this includes, you know, like 26-year-old undercover agents casting ballots as 76-year-old people, or people that would have been 76 if they weren't. Of the two attempts that were unsuccessful, one of the two was only unsuccessful because the undercover agent was attempting to cast a ballot on behalf of somebody that was a felon and I believe was incarcerated at the time. Well, they were only unsuccessful because the mother of the person who was incarcerated was actually working the polling place. And they said, hey, actually, this is I know you're not my son. So, yeah, I mean, that's just to, and, you know, so to tie back to Kavanaugh, the system's vulnerable, okay? And so, yeah, like if people think that voting in November and this whole charade with Kavanaugh is going to rile up people, and, you know, even yesterday or Wednesday, I think it was like National Register to Vote Day. So you're getting these notifications from Google and notifications from Snapchat and Facebook to go out and register to vote. Well, there's so much confusion over who can and cannot vote. You know, I mentioned the example just before the break of this priest in Illinois who was actually from England. He'd been voting. He didn't realize he wasn't supposed to be voting. I talk in the book about a lady from Texas who was, well, a green card holder, you know, a legal resident but not a citizen. And she voted in a number of counties and ultimately faced jail time because it's so, you know, it's as easy to register to vote as checking a box and get your driver's license. I mean, that's the problem. I talked about a felon from South Florida who actually worked for an elections office and she was appealing to get her rights restored. And when, you know, the thing came back, she's like, oh, actually, yeah, I've been voting. And that's how, you know, interested I am in kind of reengaging with the citizenship process. And they're like, well, that's a problem for us, right? So that's what I mean by it. And they end up victimizing these vulnerable populations, right? Non-citizens or felons. So it's very vulnerable, easily exploitable. And I would think that you've got a motivated political opposition that's prepared to take advantage of those vulnerabilities come November.
Solutions. What can we do before November? Obviously, it's coming up pretty quick. What do we need to be aware of, maybe? Maybe that's better.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, what I tell people is I think there's a number of things. Number one is, you know, we need people on the ground, right, in the polling places. We need elections monitors. We need poll watchers. We need poll workers. Because the reality is that many examples of voter fraud occur and they kind of get past the status quo, right? They get past the elections officials. They get past the supervisor of elections. They get past the Secretary of State, and they end up being certified as only because of lawyers that work with their rival campaigns who were wronged by voter fraud. Or because of media reporting on these allegations, does anything happen? So we need people to be monitoring. We need lawyers involved to kind of make sure that what's happening is legitimate. At the same time, I think we should support common sense reforms like voter ID. Let's make sure the people that are voting are the people that they claim to be. Of course, voter ID is not in and of itself a solution when the people with IDs aren't actually the people that should be voting, right? You've got a million illegal immigrants in California with driver's licenses, at least. You get people in San Francisco and Chicago and New York with these municipal IDs, which the governments have issued, and then they destroy the documentation that's used to get those IDs, so we have no record of who's actually a citizen and who's not. I think requiring an ID is one step. We want to support state efforts like Ohio and Indiana and West Virginia to make sure that the people on the voting rolls are the people that should be voting. And then, you know, we need to have some level of verification of citizenship when you register to vote. I was actually just in Chicago yesterday for an event, and, you know, I was heartened to find out that they have verification of citizenship on their voter databases, but that does not happen at the federal level. So we need to be inclusive of that. So those are, I think, three things that people should be doing.
Awesome. Awesome. There's the music. We've come to the end of the interview. The book is Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election, the website voterfraudbook.com.